Hey there, folks, and welcome to our podcast of our Catchy Lefty. We are a group of pastors that gather together and talk about our upcoming lectionary sermons. This week, we are looking at Easter 2, which will be our first reading out of the lectionary, and that's Acts chapter 4, verses 32 through 35. My name is Patrick Engel, and I am a pastor in Durango, Colorado, and joining with me today is J.R. Forster. Do you want to take it from there?
Yeah, I'm a pastor in Dallas, Texas, a church called Catalyst Community. And then also with us is John Mittendorf.
Hi, everybody. John Mittendorf here from Oklahoma City First.
So, as Patrick mentioned, our text this week is Acts 4, 32 through 35. Which if you haven't already looked it up and you're listening, is the passage where basically everyone sells everything and they have and they live together in common. So, Patrick, I thought, you know, at the beginning of the discussion, obviously it's easy to jump to this as a text being about money. But I thought you had some really good ideas about how to really take the text just a little bit more seriously than just a face value. We talk a little bit about how you're planning to approach what's going on in this text.
Yeah, so Luke is the gospel that is always talking about money. His concern is with the way that we embrace economy around us and how the people of God actually engage with the economic systems of our day. But when he does that, he's always pointing to something more than just money. And so one of the things with this text specifically, which is the second part of the letter of Luke, if you haven't known that yet, this is a Luke Acts, so we consider the author to be Luke of this chapter in Acts, is that he is addressing the fact that money is not a symbol of importance any longer in this resurrected community. What is their primary concern, what is their focus, is generosity and hospitality. So, I mean, reading these texts, I mean, you can get people on the left who talk about how this is a call to socialism. You can have people on the right who kind of get freaked out about this passage that has some sort of social agenda hidden underneath it. But it's not about a political system or even an economic system. It's about how these people are responding to the how these people are responding to the resurrection of Jesus Christ in their lives, and how it's causing them to no longer be focused upon themselves, but to start focusing on the greater community. And so I find that's interesting that this is the passage that comes up. It's the second Sunday after Easter, so we've just had this great resurrection celebration. We've been preparing it for the past 40 days in Lent. And then we enter into just kind of the way that this community functions together and their concern for one another, which is exemplified in their generosity and hospitality towards the other. So that's kind of where I'm going at with this passage, and that's how I'm going to start.
Yeah, and I think it fits perfectly with the sense that what we have in the book of Acts is not just a big, huge story in the second chapter having to do with Pentecost and then all of the ramifications thereafter. I think what we have in the book of Acts, we have Pentecost in the second chapter, but we have a lot of other what I would call Pentecosts or Pentecostal moments, let's say, throughout the book, moments when there is great evidence that the Spirit is moving and active and doing things. And those manifestations are not just the miraculous. They certainly are the miraculous, but it's not just the miraculous as we see it in Acts chapter 2. It strikes me that just before, in our text for today, 4:32 through 35, in the few verses just before, there is another mini Pentecost moment there where believers have gathered to pray and ask for boldness because they are trying to bear up against threats and against the other competing kingdoms. And having prayed that prayer, sure enough, the Spirit enters, and they are all filled, and they speak with boldness. And then immediately we have this incredible description of the Christian community. And I think what I want to say to our folks at OKC First is this, that the evidence and the manifestation of the Spirit happens, yes, in the miraculous, but it can happen just as much in the ordinary, even mundane working of the people of God, the body of Christ. So when a church is functioning as we see it functioning here in Acts chapter 4, where there is generosity and hospitality, like you mentioned, Patrick, I think maybe we can help our people by helping them to see that that function of the body is just as much a manifestation of the Spirit as anything else that we have celebrated in Acts chapter 2. So I think, again, what I want to leave my folks with is that there is a tangibility to this manifestation of the Spirit. It can happen in our midst and among us, and we can sense it in the words and then the actions, like hospitality and community and generosity and abundance.
Mm.
You know, I was thinking about how churches often seem so afraid to live the way we see the church in Acts living. And one of the guys, when we were having our catchy lucky discussion over this passage, you know, said that he brought that up. He said, you know, I think that a lot of our churches are just, you know, they feel fragile and they feel afraid. And it's interesting to me that immediately after this text is the story of Ananias and Sapphira, where, you know, they basically are mimicking this group and they're lying. You know, they sell their land and then they only give part of the money, not all the money, but they say they give all the money and then the Spirit strikes them dead. And I think what struck me about that when Chris made the comments about the perceived fragility of the church was how, in fact, if we're taking Acts seriously, the church is anything but fragile. You know, that Jesus said, on this rock I will build my church, the gates of hell will not prevail against it. And we see that in Acts. We see the Spirit building the church and the Spirit taking care of these threats against the church. And so I wonder if there's something exciting. For me, there's definitely something exciting in the midst of this text of saying, you know, you read this and it, let's be honest, it freaks all of us out that God might call us to sell everything we have and live in common, right? And so I think there's something really powerful about saying when a church chooses to pursue being loving and joyful and peaceful and patient and kind and generous and faithful and gentle and self-controlled, then we really are unstoppable and we really are anything but fragile, and that's when we really will see the kind of transformation that we long for, because it's the Spirit doing the work in us and in our community. And for me, I don't know, that I really appreciated Chris's observation, and I thought it was really an encouraging. So this became a really encouraging text for me when I've always struggled to preach this, because I honestly, I don't know any church in recent memory, certainly no church that I've experienced, where everyone sells everything they have. So a lot of times it can end up feeling like a text that we think, yeah, that was pretty cool, but no one takes it seriously anymore. And the way that you guys have been talking about it is exciting as a way to kind of take it seriously and feel it as an encouragement instead of as a condemnation.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was, as you were talking, JR, I was thinking about there's this large mega church up in the north that it was addressing kind of the community of Acts, and they had this giant box in the middle of their sanctuary, and they invited people at that moment just to give whatever they have on them that they don't need, and so they invited people as a response to come forward and just to put the stuff in this box. And this box just started to get filled up with shoes and scarves and coats. I mean, and there was some money in there. And then after they did that, the pastor invited them to look at the box and look at how much was in the middle of just things that people really felt like they didn't need. And then he invited the congregation once again to say, now come forward, and if you need something, just take it as you leave. And then the people came forward, and there were some things that were taken, but still at the end of the service, there were still things in that box. I mean, there was still goods that were left over. And I thought that was, I mean, I don't know if I'm going to be able to do that in my church yet, but I thought that was a really cool kind of imagery and even response to these passages that we're going to be reading about in Acts throughout Easter.
That's beautiful.
You know, what I think it's helpful to think about what are some of the needs that our congregations have. That was something someone else in our group brought up. You know, most of our people in our congregations probably don't live the same at the same level of physical and financial need that a lot of these people in the first century did. Not to say that there's not real tangible needs, right? But I think that a part of this text that often gets overlooked is the living in community, right? And sharing, you know, all things means, yes, physical, but also it means all of, like, the emotional support and the choice to be relationally vulnerable with people. I think that's something that we don't see a lot in kind of the suburban context that we're in, right? Is that people, it's easier a lot of times for people to write a check to something than it is to have an honest conversation with someone that they're trying to build a relationship with.
Well, I'm curious, John, actually, as I was reading this text, I've had some experience with your church when I was going to school there. I don't think you were the pastor at the time, but I know that that you really do encourage your people to kind of engage the community around them, which is kind of difficult because a lot of your people do drive into your congregation because your church is kind of in not necessarily the most glamorous part of Oklahoma City. Correct me if I'm wrong. I mean, but so my thoughts were just kind of hearken to your congregation while I was reading this passage. And I was just curious about some of the things that you have done to kind of encourage your people to look at the needs of the community that they worship around.
Yeah, I think part of what we're trying to do is teach good neighboring skills and insist that as we learn these skills of a good neighbor, that we would employ those skills not just where we receive our mail as individual households, but we would insist that it is just as important that the folks around our campus here at OKC First would understand us to be good neighbors, and our people would jump in and be involved. And so it's harder than what I'm going to say, but not as complicated as we thought. How's that? when we decided not to move, then we told everyone that we were going to stay and study the issues and the needs in our neighborhood and then try to reorganize to be a resource. Well, our turns out our neighborhood had a food security issue. There was a fairly significant literacy issue that spanned a bunch of ages. And lastly, there was a need for supervision of kids right after school until a working parent got home. Well, pretty quickly we saw that we had bitten off more than we could chew. But getting all of that work done was just a matter of organizing. First of all, it was kind of recalibrating our definition of what it meant to be the church. In addition, refiguring what words like salvation and redemption actually mean. So there's a tangibility to it now that perhaps there wasn't a decade or 15 years ago. And once you put skin and flesh on those words and recognize that we have a responsibility for all these needs, that it's just a huge mountain to climb. But I think what we've tried to say is that there are big ways for sure, but there are also very significant small ways to be involved, and neighboring can be a big it can be a big task issue or it can be a smaller task issue. And I think as we have made this possible for people by bite-sizing their contributions, not just to make it convenient, but to eliminate some of the terror of failure and the paralysis that comes when you sit down and you think, there's too much, I can't get to everything. There's too many starfish, I guess.
Yeah.
So slowly but surely, that's taken root, and folks are being good neighbors here. And then, frankly, a lot of them get in their cars and they drive 20 minutes home. But they are good neighbors here as well.
That's good.
I think that, you know, for me, at the end of all of that, it's understanding, you know, that all of that is flowing out of a life with the Spirit, right? So that, like, whatever my neighborliness looks like, it's because I have been called a neighbor by God, and sort of being able to live in that. I think that's really helped me reorient, you know, like, because like you said, John, otherwise you get into this trap of, I have to save the world, I have to fix everything,
right?
And I can't, and so I end up like despairing. And when I look instead at my acts of neighborliness, no matter how big or small they are, even if I don't sell everything I have and give it to people who have less, every act is me participating in this larger thing that God is doing. And ultimately, it's, you know, it's God's mission. It's not my mission. I'm just invited to participate.
Right.
In it. That's yeah. Really freeing for me, and I think for a lot of people.
Well, I think that's what I mean. Since we're getting to the point where we need to start wrapping it up, my final thoughts on this passage is somewhat connected to how John was saying that there are a whole bunch of many Pentecosts that are going on throughout the book of Acts. And to me, I heavily associate Pentecost with God creating and recreating. And when we read about how God creates, there's joy in what God is doing and in how God is doing it. And it brings about this communion, this solidarity between the Creator and creation. And so when we find ourselves getting caught up in the Spirit around us and the Spirit of God calling us to participate in creation, we tend to find joy and solidarity with everyone around us, whether it be the people that we may be helping or maybe the people that are helping us, or just in the fact that we are called to participate in God's ongoing creation. To me, there's great joy in that. And that's kind of the good news that I find in this passage.
It's beautiful. It's beautiful.
Yeah, I don't really have anything else to add to that, John. What about you?
No, I'm dropping the mic right there. Or I'm watching Patrick drop the mic.
All right, then, before we go, John, where can people find you on the internet if they want to hear some of your sermons or connect with you?
Okay. We are at OKC First, FIRST, OKCFirst.com, and everything is there, including our sermon recordings, or you can look us up on iTunes at OKC First Church of the Nazarene podcast.
Patrick, what about you?
Yeah, you can find me at faithcommunitynaz.church. I have a blog there, but then also my sermon is podcasted on SoundCloud, and we have some other information there. Or you can follow me on Twitter at Padraic, P-A-D-R-A-I-C, Glenn, G-L-E-N-N. J-R, you?
Yeah, I'm at J.R. Foresteros on Twitter and Facebook and all that stuff. But if you go to catrow.org, that's our church's website, you can hear all our sermons there and actually watch some of our gatherings and things like that. So thanks, everyone, for listening. This has been the third episode of Catchy Lecty. We'll be back next week to talk about Easter week 3, which is another text in Acts. But in the meantime, God be with you.